Well, now for the final hour. We have the final furlong here on Friday's edition of The Hard Shoulder. Every time at this week, at this time of the week, we take a look back at the stories that got us talking over the past 7 days. And my panel this week, it's a great pleasure to welcome back Barbara Scully, journalist and regular contributor here on News Talk. Kieran Cudahy, of course, presenter of On The Record on Sundays at 11 till 1 on the station here, and ubiquitous across the schedule. And it's a great pleasure to welcome, and I really don't know why, because A, he's representing the Green Party. Secondly, he's a zealous for the Irish language. I don't know what he's doing on The Hard Shoulder, but it's a great pleasure to have him back anyway. Padder, I'll take a deep breath. O'Kane Vonnegh.
Yes.
All right. It'll take me a lifetime to learn that. He is the Irish language spokesperson of the Green Party, and he is all-knowing when it comes to sustaining and protecting the Irish language. But never mind the Irish language. Let's just start with the announcement by Richard Bruton, the Minister for Education, today that physical education is going to be a Leaving Cert subject. I mean, I never thought doing your press-ups and jumping over an owl horse would be a Leaving Cert subject. Padder, what do you make of that?
Yeah, it's a...
Well, if we can have Irish, why not PE, I suppose?
Look, I think it's a vital part of the school curriculum. I think that it's underutilised. I know when I was in school, we got PE in first and second year and fifth year, and that was it. We didn't have any during Leaving Cert year, and that was a vital part of growing up that sort of was kind of missed out on. And I don't know how it's going to be examined. Like, what do you do? Like,
that's
my point. Do you examine it on efforts? Because, like, I wasn't very good. I played every sport in school, all of them, and I played them every day. I wasn't very good at them. So I don't know, would I get an A for effort, or do you have to score all the goals?
Would you have to have written questions about your biceps or your triceps, Barbara?
Why are you looking at me? I think this is a rubbish idea. I'm all for PE in school. I'm all for physical activity for kids. But I think that making it a Leaving Cert subject is absolutely ridiculous for that very reason. How the hell do you examine it? Like Padder, I did PE every week in school. It was the worst hour of the entire week every week because of my great height. I was press ganged into the basketball team, and not only was I press ganged into the basketball team, I was press ganged into the A team where I didn't belong, but they only put me there because I was 6 foot tall
and you'd be close to the basket. Yeah,
it was just stand under the basket, look a bit useful, you don't have to do anything except put the ball in the basket.
Right.
I hated it because I was, and all my friends were on the B team who never cared less whether they won a match or not, whereas all my colleagues on the A team were so focused, were so into winning. It was terrible.
Slam dunk Scully.
It sounds miserable. Kieran, now I know you're from hurling dynasty in terms of Kilkenny and all things sporty, and you know you're very supple and of a strong build. You were speaking earlier.
Thanks, Ivan.
You were speaking earlier about our education system. You were out at Rathmines School talking to us about the youngsters. What's your take on this?
I would have loved it if you could have done PE as a Leaving Cert subject when I was there. You know, I guess if you're useless at it, you just don't pick it. You know, it wouldn't be a compulsory subject.
Fair enough, yeah.
So, I don't know, is that a way of assessing
it? How would you test it, though?
Well, I guess, what's wrong with having is, I know you kind of said it like a bit facetiously, but what's wrong with a few questions on your biceps or triceps? It could have an element of, you know,
and nutrition and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I don't know. I don't see the problem with it. I would have loved if I was in school and you could have done it.
Do you know what's mad about this, though? Is that when my kids, who are obviously all now nearly finished school, but when they were in junior school, what was starting to come in was this move against sports days. You know, that instead of having a sports day where kids won a race or whatever and got a medal and stood up on a podium and were celebrated, they turned them into, what were they called, like fun days or something.
Oh, so there's
no
losers.
So there was no element of competition and nobody lost. And I thought that was absolutely terrible idea because a lot of the kids, with all due respects to you, Kieran, a lot of the kids who were good at sport... Maybe wanted to win.
You
know, maybe weren't academically.
All right.
You know, it was the one thing that they could
thinkers.
Be brilliant at.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, they weren't all thinkers. No, they weren't all thinkers.
You can only put a certain amount of effort into things, you know? Like,
I can't tell you on radio the look, the sour puss on Kieran's face as she had her punchline there. As Barbara had her punchline there. Let me move on to my next topic. Now, I have a few names for you. What does Mick Jagger, Billy Joel, Gabriel Byrne, just in the, what was it, Lifetime Academy thing for the IFTAs at the weekend. What do they all have in common? Well, they all became dads later in life. Jagger was 73, Billy Joel and Ronnie Wood at 68, Rowan Atkinson at 62, and Irish actor Gabriel Byrne appeared on The Late Late Show last week and spoke about what it's like to be a dad for the, wait for it, third time at 67. This is what he had to say.
It is bittersweet. But when you are surrounded by pure love, pure joy, pure innocence, it's hard not to be deeply, deeply moved. But a child reorientates you to the world around you to realise how vital and precious every moment and every day is.
Oh dear.
Until they become teenagers. Yeah. Sure.
Well, no, I'm not sure I can hack that kind of cynicism.
These lads won't be around by the time the kids become teenagers.
That's exactly it.
That's the whole point.
They're wise.
He has spent far too long in Hollywood. Barbara, what's your take on this? I have a strong view. Let's hear your view.
My view is, well, first of all, it's the one thing that still makes me feel discriminated against as a woman, because men can go on and procreate into their 60s and 70s.
It's the last thing to die, they tell me.
Right, okay. Your word for that. You know,
I'm
so
curious,
I kind of feel,
who's they?
Deirdre.
Stop. Jesus.
Carry on.
I'm starting to feel nauseous now.
Okay.
But anyway, leaving that aside, I feel discriminated against until I realise, why the hell would you want to be a parent in your 60s or your 70s? Anybody who is a parent knows that it's like really tough job. And as I was facetiously and jokingly saying earlier, the hardest part of it is when they get to be teenagers.
Sure.
So these guys are really smart. As Kieran said, they're all going to be gone by the time their kids are teenagers, so they're going to be leaving their younger
female partners.
No, I don't disapprove, because it's up to everybody to do whatever the hell they want to do. And I can understand, in the case of the names you read out, I can understand how a younger woman would fall deeply and passionately
in love with
Gabriel Byrne.
Yeah, yeah.
And she might want
a
child.
What is it about the millionaire that attracted you to him?
Yeah. He's got the soul of a poet, Kieran. It's nothing to do with money.
Right. Padder, I mean, like, my take on this is that, and I know people who had their first kid in their 60s, but it was actually first time round. Where it's multiple time around, you know, the old gag, you know, at 40, I want to trade her in for 220s and all that kind of sexist stuff. The point I'm trying to make is this, that actually these people are in deep denial. They are growing old and they want to kind of have this eternal youth, that they're still the same guy they were in their 30s. And it's
all
they
do that by living vicariously through a child?
Being a young dad again. And it's all nonsense.
Being a young dad.
An old dad, yeah.
Even though your arthritic back won't let you pick up the child.
Yeah, and you won't be around. Like, it's irresponsible.
That's the bit that's bittersweet. I don't think it's irresponsible, especially not in the case of these multimillionaires where the child can be provided for. I don't think there's an element of irresponsibility to it, not in the names that you've mentioned. But I've been thinking about it all week because my wife and I are expecting our first. We're in our 30s.
You know it is $250,000 net in cash, the cost of a kid up to 25 years.
I'm just doing more lotto games every week. You're a million.
Too late, Ivan.
But so we've been thinking about this, and like, we're 10 years older than the previous generation would have been having kids. You know, it takes 10 years longer.
Which is the new norm.
It is the new norm, but I look at my grandmother who's 90. She's going to be 91 next month, and she's got 10 great-grandkids, and I kind of realise I'm not going to see that. I'm not going to see great-grandchildren.
Well, you never know. Life expectancy is rising. Yeah,
it is rising, but it's unlikely that I'll see great-grandchildren. So things are changing. Now, they're not changing as ridiculously much as that, like that the average age of first-time fathers won't be 67 anytime soon, but there is a bittersweet element that we won't have that which was there before for previous generations.
But it is bittersweet. Is it not the case, Kieran, because you're right in the middle of this, two young toddlers, that parenting is a young man's game?
Yeah, it is. I would
Excuse me. Or woman's game?
No, but I take it that 90% of the thing is going to be done by a mother anyway. But I thought that'd be sexist to even say that.
No, that's not what I said either. Carry on.
Right.
It is. I would.
Whatever you do,
I would hate to have to do what we do if we were in our, like, the people, the list of names you read out and their ages. Like, that's a lot of stuff. They're older than my parents, and my parents are great help with our kids. But by God, they love handing them back, you know, after a few hours or after the night, whatever it is.
Touché.
And they're absolutely exhausted.
Did you hear Gabriel Byrne talk about his experience of childhood? Yes. That is the voice of a man who's never changed a nappy and will never change a nappy. That's a man true. Who can afford an au pair and a nanny and a maid and whatever help that's there. Like, you know what I mean? If you're a multimillionaire, I think the sort of the view you have of a change isn't
the
parenting
help.
Can be this easy
Patrick,
thing that's
you're
lovely.
I can't afford all those things.
I've taken that leap. I've taken that leap.
Okay, so the general consensus is it's a bad idea unless you're very wealthy. Is that what I'm picking up here?
You can do what you like. You can do what you like, but obviously
if you have enough money,
if you're wealthy, it's going to make it a lot easier on the children.
Okay, let's move to our next thing. Are funny people smarter people?
Welcome to Slough, to the new people. My name's David Brent, and I've always been in the paper industry, haven't I? Yeah. My parents owned a paper shop until it blew away. Paper. It's better ones than that. Okay. Yeah, I'm not used to public squeaking. I piss pronunciate a lot of my worms. Do you know what? That's the two Ronnies. Do you not like that? That is classic stuff. Turn the phone off. That's part of it. If you're not concentrating, you're not going to enjoy it as much.
Classic Ricky Gervais there as David Brent in the classic The Office series. Researchers in Austria recently discovered that funny people, particularly those who enjoy dark humour, have higher IQs than less funny peers. They argue that it takes both cognitive and emotional ability to process and produce humour. Their analysis shows that funny people have higher verbal and non-verbal intelligence, whatever that is, and they score lower in mood disturbance, whatever that is, and aggressiveness. Kieran, you're our funny man here. What's your take on this?
Oh, my God. After Barbara suggested I was dim-witted.
You're just physically...
Because I was into sport, I must be a little slow. That maybe I should crack a few more jokes to compensate.
Look, we're wasting Kieran.
Exactly. Maybe I'm not that funny.
I think there is something in this insofar as that I you know, when you see someone like Dara O'Brien or Tommy Turner and stand-up people, their actual instantaneous responses to hecklers and that kind of thing. Now, some of them, they've seen it all 100 times before and it's kind of almost on autopilot. But they are bright people.
They are. There's nothing more impressive than when you see a comedian, and Ross Noble is very good for this, doing entire shows where they have essentially very little script. You know what I mean? They'll completely wing it based on where they are, based on what people are dressed like in the audience. And like I said, there's a few cues that they'll always, you know, they'll always find someone with blonde hair or someone who's tall or whatever, and that they'll work in a few jokes. But when you see them just completely winging it, it is incredibly impressive. And some of those names you mentioned, Dara O'Brien, like academically he's highly intelligent as well, isn't he? Doesn't he have a physics degree?
He's got a master's
in sky.
He's got a master's in physics. He's completely bilingual. He's an incredibly intelligent.
Do you think there's something?
He speaks Wicklow and English.
Well, that's brave. That's brave. We gotta make allowances.
He was no use of PE though.
You really have it in for work here. Patter, I mean, could this be true?
It certainly could be true. And I think you look at like comedians like Frankie Boyle and Stuart Lee that are pushing the boundaries of what comedy is and turning it into an art form. But the worrying thing for me is it doesn't explain the Brendan O'Carroll paradox. Because he's obviously very intelligent because he's made an absolute fortune. Yeah. Out of the least funny thing that's ever happened. And he sold it to the BBC and is making millions. So
right. Because we had a feature on today's programme about his mammy and the real Mrs. Brown, because a documentary is going out over the weekend. She was the Labour TD, Stony Batter, first Labour TD, 1954 to 57, as a woman. And it's amazing that you should. So you're saying, A, Mrs. Brown is unfunny.
Completely. That's the hill on which I will die, Ivan. That is something I will stand by.
You know, it's a bit of a kind of paradox because, like, you're pushing the Irish language and no one's interested in it, but everyone's interested in Mrs. Brown and you're not interested in it. Is there not a message for you here, Patrick?
If the message is I have to like Mrs. Brown's boys, I'm just going to leave. But look, it's obviously a very, very intelligent man, and maybe there is some correlation between those that are good at making people laugh
Is there a kind of humorous insight that involves high IQ, Barbara?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, again, taking it away from the high-profile male comedians that you all mentioned, people we all know in our normal day-to-day lives who are witty and who are good company generally have that same thing of being very fast on their feet. They can respond to something very quickly. They also generally tend to have a very good command command a language, so they can, you know, find the words very quickly to respond to something. So I mean, this is a no surprise, obviously, to me. And again, I think, you know, that the men you've mentioned, and I agree totally with Tommy, with the
don't
Tommy
tell me
Tiernan.
This is a gender issue.
No, it's
well,
not. I'm going to mention the women in a second. But Tommy Tiernan, I think, is a prime example of somebody who is extremely funny. But when you watch his chat show, or if you read his stuff in the Sindo, and the Sunday Independent, he writes a column every week, and it's brilliant. It's brilliant. And
Deirdre
it's deep.
Kane
he's
is
a deep
also,
thinker.
You know, the lady fantastic. Who's on the dancing one
yes,
now? Deirdre,
yeah.
isn't it? Deirdre Kane.
Deirdre Kane,
she's
yeah.
very good.
She's extremely good. But you also have some of the best comedies you've mentioned. What you call Brendan O'Carroll's Mrs. Brown's boys as being not funny, and I'd be kind of agreeing with you on that. The funniest thing that's been on television in years is Dairy Girls, which is
it's
written
amazing.
By a woman,
everyone
and it
tells
is brilliant. It
girls.
Is brilliant,
it.
Utterly amazing.
See, I don't like Nordies. Will I like it?
You will love this. Honestly, it is smart. It is.
Does
clever.
It take the urine out of Nordies?
Then
I really love
it. Not out of Nordies,
in
but
a
it's
nice,
just
self-deprecating way,
and it's brilliant. Equally, Can't Cope, Won't Cope. I think that was written by a woman,
Preisner,
Stephanie
yeah.
Preisner, and Alison Spittle had a comedy that I didn't see actually, but again, I think it did
nowhere fast. It was really good. Yeah.
So you know, there's women. There's women writing great comedy at the moment as well. Intelligent comedy when you compare it to, as I say, the likes of Mrs. Brown's
and
Boys.
And John Cleese and Connie Booth, who played the maids. They're a great team as well.
Yeah. They were the writing team on Fawlty Towers, which is
one of
the greatest,
yeah.
funniest things ever created.
Yeah.
Women of the 70s.
Yep.
But what I'm stuck on here is this. This Austrian research said higher verbal and non-verbal intelligence and mood disturbance and aggressiveness. I didn't know. Tell me about all that.
Well, I mean,
but what
I mean,
is mood disturbance?
There's people who are
cranky.
Moody, people who are cranky.
Right.
If you had a better sense of humour,
you'd
be all sunshine and light.
Now, what's
all the
non-verbal
time?
Intelligence? Is that you're good at maths, is it?
Or sport.
It's more looking vacantly at Pat here.
It's more like picking up cues, subtle cues off people, reading situations.
But that's emotional
like
intelligence.
That. There's a little bit of that to it as well. Yeah. Verbal and non-verbal. The interesting thing is this idea of mood disturbance and the likes and the link between people who are unnecessarily cranky and perhaps potentially a lower IQ. I'd really like to have a look at the research, find out a little bit more.
Right. All right. Well, we're going to take our first short break here now to gather our thoughts. My final furlong panellists are Barbara Scully, Kieran Cuddy, Padder O'Kane of Onig is staying with us.
I think he mangled that, okay. didn't he, Padder?
Yeah.
We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to The Hard Shoulder. My final furlong panellists of Kieran Cuddy, Barbara Scully and Padder O'Kane of Onig are still with us. Before we go to the news, there was just an interesting story. I don't know if you guys saw it. The chairman of Kerry County Council apologised to a party colleague for saying she should dye her hair blonde to get noticed in the council chamber when seeking speaking time. John Sheehan, Fine Gael Cathaoirleach of Kerry County Council, made the remarks to Councillor Aoife Thornton after he later did apologise. Barbara, I'd say you're apoplectic about this.
First of all, can I say that if you say you're sorry for something and then say, but you did nothing wrong, that's actually not an apology. Yeah. So could somebody explain that to this guy first off?
Well, I do
it's
an apology, which is, Barbara,
if you've been offended, that's not an apology either. Yes, yeah. No, that's not an apology either.
That's so my favourite.
We
one.
Need to clarify what apologies are and aren't. So he didn't apologise at all. I think, you know, he's given us a very typical example of the kind of everyday sexism that most women have experienced at some stage in a working environment. I think he's also highlighted another issue that a lot of women have in a business or a working environment where they're at meetings and they find it very hard to be heard. They are interrupted. Men will interrupt women far more than they will interrupt other men. There's research to back that up. And the other research shows us that very often women are subject to idea theft. So in other words, they come up with an idea and it's not commented on at all. And then a man comes up with exactly the same idea a few minutes later and it's all great.
Yeah, I think what Barbara's hinting at is the idea
don't
of idea theft.
Because
sometimes
God's
women
sake,
come up with ideas.
You're letting the side down. Do not interrupt Barbara. Men are doing this all the time.
So, carry on,
Barbara.
He is highlighting something that it happens and most women have experienced it. So I think that Councillor Aoife Thornton obviously had a very valid complaint. But I think to react by reducing her to her physicality and commenting on her hair and saying she should be blonde is a very old trick to undermine women. It's sexist, it's personal, it's highly unprofessional, it's bad-mannered and it's unacceptable. So yeah, he was bang out of order. Okay. Somebody in his life, a woman perhaps, should take him aside and explain all that to him.
How then, Padder, could you explain, for instance, like every Monday on this show, I do a little bit of my own Ivan up the yard review of Dancing with the Stars. And one of the gags I'd say is, and would you believe it, Marty survived again. And this week his teeth were even whiter and his hair was even darker. And I would have other men that I would have criticised, or you seem to have darker hair, or there's other well-known personages. And I have a thing myself that you're better off not, because once you start taking these things, you have to keep taking them. Do you understand me? As regards dyeing your hair. Is that not gender neutral?
No. Not in any context is this gender neutral, because this is something that he would not in a million years say to a male party colleague. You should dye your hair not at all. Like there's no equivalent. I'm struggling to even think of what you could possibly say to a party colleague who was male that they should have done to get more attention. Like you should have stuffed the front of your trousers a bit more to get a bit more attention or something like that. Like it's ridiculous. I, for one, I can't wait for the coming weeks when we find out that Councillor Sheen is the real victim. of PC culture gone mad. Right. I can't wait to read those hot takes. Those are going to be fantastic. But listen, ridiculing Marty's appearance on Dancing with the Stars is a national institution and something that shouldn't be under threat from this kind of carry on there. It's very important that you carry on with this.
And the big difference is this was in the workplace. This is in the workplace. Yeah. This woman is doing a serious job. She's in the workplace. That's the big difference.
Yeah. Unlike your radio show, people are expected to act professional.
Yes.
In the work area.
Yeah, it's everything that Barbara said, but it's also not that surprising, really, is it, that this was said? Like, Kerry County Council, this is the same County Council a few years ago.
Of course, it's an independent republic, yeah.
Yeah, a few years ago, who passed a motion suggesting that people who live in rural parts of the county would get permits to allow them to drink and drive. And of course, the councillor at the time who proposed that motion was rewarded by being elected to the Dáil, Danny Healy Ray.
And he said that the fairies were responsible for the potholes, isn't that right as well? But the point is this, they get two seats out of it. Yeah.
And sexism isn't just, I know the Kerry County Council come up with some mad ideas, but this happens everywhere. Yeah. It's just that it's been highlighted.
This
here.
Is the story
this
from
this
week.
This is not specific to Kerry, yeah.
This is the story from this week. But
is it more clumsy and kind of unfunny, or is it just sexist?
It's sexist. Now, having said that, I do think that men of a certain age seem to have a terrible problem in catching up with stuff that was acceptable 20, 30, 40 years ago and is no longer acceptable, which is why I think somebody should explain it to John Sheehan.
All right. Point taken. Stand corrected. Cathaoirleach of Kerry County Council. We're going to take a quick update now and let's get the latest news. Welcome back to The Hard Shoulder, and my final furlong panellists are staying with me, Kieran Cuddihy, Barbara Scully and Padder O'Quavonig. Now, we're going to talk about Donald Trump. He suggested on Wednesday during a listening session with survivors and family members of school shootings that arming teachers could be one solution to stopping further tragedy. Let's have a listen to what he had to say.
It only works where you have people very adept at using firearms, of which you have many. And it would be teachers and coaches. And this would only be obviously for people that are very adept at handling a gun. And it would be, it's called concealed carry, where a teacher would have a concealed gun on them. They'd go for special training.
Now, obviously, and we had teachers from Florida on the program, represented the Education Association there, Kieran, the instinctive reaction is it's abhorrent. And then the subsequent story came out that there was actually a guard that was armed in the school who sort of didn't show up. A police officer. Yeah. What's your take on this?
The initial reaction in this case is the right one. It is abhorrent, the idea that you would arm teachers and that they would have to go in wearing Kevlar vests and, you know, have a kind of a gun strapped to their thigh or whatever it happened to be. Of course it's abhorrent, but like, is that more likely than gun control? It probably is at this stage in the United States, you'd imagine. Like, Sandy Hook, it was the turning point for me. When we talk about all the shootings, the mass shootings, like in Sandy Hook, 27 people were killed. He killed his mother. He killed 6 adult teachers. And he shot 20 children who were all aged either 6 or 7. And nothing happened in the wake of it. And that was, you know, we had Barack Obama crying at the funerals. We had this huge outpouring of grief. And there was nothing. Nothing happened. And at that point,
that, you know, there was, I suppose, like a moral calculation was done. Like, essentially, what people in favour of the proliferation of guns decided was, you know what, the death of 26 and 7 year olds is actually is a price worth paying for us to be allowed to carry guns. And once they kind of had done that mental hurdle or gymnastics with themselves, the notion that there'd ever be gun control, certainly within the next few years, is just laughable.
Okay. Just on that.
Yeah.
You're saying it's a cultural thing. It's really deep. It's the amendment to constitutional right. I sort of detected from the responses of the families and so on, it was a little bit more visceral. We're not putting up with this anymore. Like, it took 9/11 to fix, you know, terror in terms of attitudes. Mm. Is the worm turning or not?
I don't think so. I just don't think it is. That's the sense I would get. And even the bump stocks, which is the regulation that's going to come in, like, is kind of an inconsequential thing, really. Now, I know in Las Vegas, a bump stock was used to great effect when, 57 people were killed. But, like, it's the assault weapons ban that was there from 1995 up to the mid-2000s. That essentially is what you need to bring back in. And there's not a hope in hell of that coming back in.
Barbara.
I don't know. I just find the whole situation disturbing, and also I feel very sorry for America. I think America is in serious trouble. I think that most of us outside of the United States cannot understand how this is allowed to happen time and time and time and time again. And I love America, and I've always found the people of America to be among the friendliest that I have ever spent any time with. And I feel deeply sorry for them at the moment, to hear their president talk such absolute rot as to arming teachers.
But the Congress wouldn't be that different.
Okay. Tom Clonan wrote a very good piece in the Journal today where he made some interesting points about this suggestion of arming teachers. You know, besides the fact that it flies in the face of everything that we want from a school and from from teachers who are minding our children, if you like, during the day. Trump suggested arming about 20% of teachers after training. That would create an armed force that is about the same size as the US military. Like, that's incredible.
Just numerically. Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Numerically. That is incredible. Yeah. Like, what is that going to do to a society already...
But are you seriously saying that if Hillary Clinton was president of the United States, this wouldn't have happened?
No. I think this is something so deeply ingrained in the psyche. But it makes no sense. This right to bear arms, this amendment to the Constitution that they hold so dear, makes no sense in a civilized society.
I know that, but is the problem not deeper than Trump?
Oh, it's deeper than Trump. Absolutely, it's deeper than Trump. But in Trump, you have somebody who seems to be a cheerleader for the NRA.
Yeah, in Trump, you have an excellent symptom of the rot as opposed to a cause of it. Even if arming teachers were in any way a good idea, right? And anyone who thinks that arming teachers is a good idea seems to forget that one of the worst massacres, and it's terrible that we talk about a country, a civilized country, where we have a list of 100 massacres and we can see which one is the worst. One of the worst ones happened at Fort Hood, a US military base. A man walked in with a gun and killed 13 people at a military base where everyone had guns, where there were guns everywhere. And the fact of the matter is, teachers, if the people who are proposing this are the same people who underfund schools. Have you ever been in an American school? They don't have markers. They don't have whiteboards. They don't have dusters. They don't have. There's no windows in some of them. They're falling apart. The whole state of Alabama is considering going to a 4-day week in schools because they can't afford to keep the lights and the heat on. Like, who's going to pay for the guns? It's unbelievable that this would even be suggested by the same people who defund federal government like this. It's not a solution. And you listen to that goon sitting there with his piece of paper in his hand that says listen on it, because he has to be reminded to listen to victims of one of the worst massacres in US history. And he sits there. They asked one of the survivors on NBC, they asked him this morning, did you feel that the president heard you when you went to the White House? He said, I know he heard me. It was written on his piece of paper. Listen. Like this.
But I mean, like when
there,
I was minister, I was handed pieces of paper of, you know, look earnest. You know what I mean?
Who's earnest?
No. What I'm talking about, Obama would have received, it's a case of all politicians receive briefing notes
you
from PR people.
You shouldn't need briefing notes in order to be empathetic. even if you do, you shouldn't. You've no place in politics.
Even after 9/11, and I hate the fact that one of the worst things that Donald Trump has done is he's humanized George W. Bush. We look back at George W. Bush and we actually go, wow, what a president compared to this one. After 9/11, there were no briefing notes. There were nothing. He was in a school. He had to react immediately. Okay. There were no briefing notes.
Well, let's, speaking of matters presidential, according to the Irish Times this week, President Michael D. Higgins is seeking a second term of office. It may be a badly kept secret because he previously said he would reveal at the Ploughing Championships next September whether he planned to run again, which would be cutting it pretty close to the actual deadline for people to be nominated. So, it's due in November. Should the president run for a second term? Well, I discussed that item with a friend of the president's and a former colleague, Pat Rabbit, former Labour leader, and Kevin Doyle, group political editor of INM. Here's what Pat Rabbit's advice as a friend to Michael D was.
Politically, I think there are a lot of attractions to Michael D running again. He has had an exceptionally good term of office. And from the point of view, I think, of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, I think they would be very happy to see him staying in post. As a friend, I think I would say to him, you know, he has given his all to public service for a very, very long time. And in those circumstances, if I were in his shoes, I think I would like some private retirement time.
Yeah, if I could decode that, Barbara Scully, it is, maybe you should be president again, but is it in your own best interest? What advice would you give to the president? Would you like to see him have a second term, Barbara Scully?
Yeah, personally, I would. I think he's a terrific president. I think he's an outstanding president. And I think it's ageist to suggest that he shouldn't just because of his age, particularly when it hasn't slowed him up or impeded him in any way that we've seen in the last 7 years.
What's wrong with being ageist?
No, you shouldn't be ageist. If he's able, somebody's either able to do a job or not. He's clearly well able to do the job and he's doing a great job. So therefore, I'd be delighted to see him there. I worry, like, he's the third in a succession of great presidents that we've had. We had Mary Robinson, we had Mary McAleese, and we had Michael D. All have been tremendous, pillars for Ireland and spokespeople for Ireland. But I worry that this is going to go the way of the Eurovision. We had great success in the Eurovision. We had three or four winners one after the other, and then something happened and I think we got complacent or something and we thought that whatever Turkey we sent to the Eurovision would
Johnny
bring back
Logan
the prize, and we've languished.
We ended up with Dustin.
We've languished like in the bottom of the
Johnny
pile.
Logan for president, is that?
No, I think Dustin for president is what we're talking about here.
We need to hang on to Michael D in case there's turkeys out there in the ether waiting to run and that we might inadvertently elect somebody who would be absolutely useless.
There are turkeys out there in the ether waiting to run. There are turkeys who have declared their intention to run for president.
The notion,
they're out there.
The notion that someone might be elected who's a turkey and that should then be unacceptable for the party is a wonderful thought. Forget democracy. Kieran, what's your take? Would you give him another turn?
I would. As Barbara said, age hasn't slowed him down. It certainly hasn't slowed his wits because he's been running for re-election for about 2 years now, at least 2 years, and very cleverly not officially announcing it so that no one else could join the race. He basically had the whole field to himself. So he knows exactly what he's doing. It's not his age so much that bothers me. It's more the promise during the first election that he wasn't going to run for a second term.
The reneging of the promise.
I think we need more politicians who might be able to, look at events and go, you know what, I've changed my mind.
No,
I like this.
So
I'm
if
doing
Trump
a good
said
job,
he wanted to go for a second term, no, you'd have
no
problem.
Yeah, but as long as that's kind of outside events, really it's just selfishness. He just likes it,
no,
so I just want to stay.
No, it's not. He's good at it and he knows he's
good
at it.
He thinks he's good at it.
Do you not think he's good at it?
Everyone, I'm sure, thinks he's good at it.
First of all, there's a couple of issues. One is, he is entitled to go again should there be a contest or should he get a coronation. And, some of his tactics have led to people to believe that he'd prefer to have a coronation than a contest. But on the ageist point, I'd like to go straight to this. You said that it would be ageist and therefore it's a criminal offence to be ageist, and that's all grand. But the reality is that I know people working in the public sector, and I'll name one. One of the finest political editors in the country was David Davenport. And he actually has young kids and so on. He was told, you're 65. No, you must retire.
Yeah.
And I'm saying,
that's
if it's
also
one rule,
ageist.
No, but if it's one rule for people in the Gardaí and teachers and so on, why shouldn't it be a rule in terms of someone who's 77 who's going to be 84 or 85 if he serves a second term, because it's such a long term of 7 years?
Because those rules don't apply to elected officials. As you know, as a former TD, you know this. Like, you know, you like the rules in place where people are forced to retire at a certain age are ageist. And just because something is ageist on the one hand, that's no reason to put your hand up and say, well, we should be ageist with our Twice. With our president. Like that, no, two wrongs don't make a right. That's ageist.
But sorry, and are you saying that someone in their 80s is perfectly healthy mentally and physically as someone younger? Are you saying that?
No, I'm saying that someone who's in their 70s or their 80s, and if they feel able to do the job that's presented in front of them, should be entitled to give it a lash.
And if they can do the job, and if they're proving that they can do the job, you're either competent or you're not competent.
And Michael D has shown himself to be very competent.
Exactly, and this age doesn't necessarily come into it.
This is why we should have an election, so that people who maybe think it is a physically demanding job and walking around and shaking the hands, maybe someone in their 80s couldn't do it.
I'll give you the Queen of England. Look at the Queen of England. She's in her 90s now.
Yeah, but Dev was fairly bet by the end.
Dev is the only president who's ever had to face an election for re-election, and he got it. So whenever anybody says, "Oh, Dev was fairly bad at the end," Dev actually went and won an election for re-election.
But sure,
and
that
got
was
the
in
second term.
An era where you know
but
what I mean.
Everybody
there
else
wasn't
was
a lot
unchallenged.
Of competition.
Nobody else has ever been challenged for their second term. I don't know where this argument is coming from that we're somehow entitled to an election for a second term. He's proved himself to be quite the good president. He hasn't done anything to embarrass this country at any stage in his presidency.
My actual point is this. In fact, because he's been a good president, he's a bit like Mike Tyson, who's gone for one bout too many. He'll tarnish his legacy of trying to stay on beyond his sell-by.
What's the worst that could possibly happen?
Oh, the worst that could happen is that he gets...
But Pat, it sounds like you're arguing against any sort of presidential election. You know, like the reason they're 7 year term, the 7 year terms are not a 14 year term for a reason. You know, you can't just extend it because you feel like extending
except
it.
Except that's what we've done in every case except for De Valera.
No, that isn't the case. History of the state. Only two, Paddy Hillary and Mary McAleese got two uncontested, but everyone else had to either get out or fight an election.
No. People elected not to. So Carola Dalig resigned, Erskine Childers died, Shanti O'Callaghan, Douglas Hyde did
the
one
other
term.
Thing is,
Dev was the only person who ever faced...
That, like, we haven't often had elections for someone seeking their second term, so we shouldn't do it.
Yeah, but you see, all you guys all want an election because you love elections.
It's true.
You know?
I just want a new president. Yeah. All right. Let's take a listen to this.
So let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
That is an advert that plays out in US cinemas because we wanted to play that because Cinemark, the chain of 500 cinemas, are banning bags bigger than 12 by 12 inches because people are basically bringing their own sweets, their own popcorn, their own drinks in instead of paying the exorbitant prices. Which brings us to a whole other thing is what is the most irritating thing of people crunching taco crisps, crinkly papers and all the rest of it? Should we ban sweeties and things like that in cinemas?
The worst for me. My worst is mobile phones. People with their screens on in the cinema. If anybody turns on a mobile phone between me and the screen, my eye is instantly brought to it. It's the worst. I think rather than banning sweets, we should ban other people from cinemas.
Right.
That's called your sitting room, like.
Yeah, yeah. Basically, okay. If I could just watch movies on my own. I hate it. Mobile phones, it drives me.
And would you go to the cinema much?
I love going to the cinema. I absolutely adore it. It's a lovely experience.
And
it's a more expensive experience.
You know, like,
it's
a special offer if you buy two of those bags of popcorn.
Oh, listen, the food's so expensive. Of course I smuggle in food. I think that's part of our culture. It's 30 quid for two cinema tickets before you buy any popcorn. Never mind spending 8 quid on a bucket of popcorn and €4 on a massive soft drink you can never hope to finish. It's silly. And the worst thing about it is I love getting ice cream in the cinema, and it's by the time the trailers are finished, it's melted. It's pointless. The food's all
are
gone.
You going to, do you go to the movies a lot?
I used to go to the movies a lot. I was a great man to go to the movies on my own during the day, you know, especially when we used to, when I used to work on the breakfast show and you'd finish early and you'd have time off. I love going to the cinema on my own. Great rare treat.
How early
treat.
Can you go? Is it open at 11 or what time is
that? Oh, yeah, like Cineworld up on Parnell Street when I was living in Dublin. Yeah, Barbara, get that look off your face.
It's very honest.
Half disgust and half pity. What time?
you could go at about 11 or 12. There'd be loads of
brave man who admits this, Barbara.
Yeah.
Lots of people there on their own.
No, when you work shifts of getting up at 3:45 in the morning, it's not funny, actually.
Yeah, exactly.
But we mentioned
children early. Since I've had kids, I don't go to the cinema that much anymore. Right. Because when you pay for a babysitter, you don't want to spend 30 quid on two cinema tickets and then a fortune on popcorn and everything else. The only time I do go, the last time I was at the cinema was a kids club. And I don't know if you've been to a kids club, but if you find noises in the cinema and people eating popcorn,
it's a head wreck.
And parents looking at YouTube videos on their phone, they're so bored of what's on the screen. Do not go to the kids club.
Okay, and what is your pet hate as you sit there?
Muttering, people muttering around me.
Talking.
Oh yeah, it drives me mental.
Right, right. And if someone kind of say it was a weepy film and they're shedding a tear, that you'd go with that?
I'd shed a tear myself at a weepy film.
All right. Barbara, I'd say you blub your eyes out. What's the story? What irritates you?
I hate the smell of popcorn. I actually hate the smell of popcorn. Oh, yeah. I'm not great on the smell of popcorn.
It's a kind of burnt smell off it. It's not too bad.
I just hate the fact that when you go into a cinema, I like going to the cinema. I don't go as often as I probably should. I'm always missing movies. You know, I make a mental note, oh, that's on, I must go and see it. And then that's finished and I've missed it. But I hate when you go into a cinema and there's the smell of popcorn and kind of whatever the previous lot were watching and they all ate. You know, there's kind of these lingering foodie smells.
Dirty.
Yeah, I don't really like that. Well,
and would
be
you
afraid
bring,
to
a,
say,
bring a big, ugly, ignorant bag?
I don't know
with
why
things.
People have to eat when they're watching movies.
Right.
A drink, fine, but I don't know why people can't just have. I'm all into these. You know, a lot of the cinemas, particularly the ones in shopping centres, do a meal and a movie ticket deal where you can go and get a meal first or after and you can get your movie ticket. That to me is the way you eat and then you watch the movie. You don't do the two necessarily together. Although on my list is to go to the Stella Cinema in Rathmines, which has all been revamped and has meant to be fabulous, and you can have drinks and cocktails.
You have people text in about it
all.
That it's changed the whole experience.
Yeah, I'd fancy giving that a shot. All right.
Well, I'm going to give you the last word. Barbara Scully, journalist, Kieran Cuddy, presenter here on News Talk, and you can hear more from Kieran on Sunday. Anything special this 11 o'clock?
Sunday at 11 o'clock we'll have the usual newspaper review and then a big profile interview at 12 o'clock. Stay tuned.
Okay, that sounds good. And Padraig O'Quavonig, thank you indeed. Broadcaster with Radio Na Life, Liffey, and Pop of Gaeltacht, and more especially Green Party Irish language spokesperson. Thank you all for being my guests. And that's your lot, not only for the final furlong, but for the hard shoulder this week. My thanks to the production team, editor Mark Simpson, producers Dan Flanagan and Emma Cawley, researchers Kira Courtney, Steve Daunton, John O'Donovan. Off the Ball is up next. Go on Ireland in the Aviva tomorrow. I'll be back on Monday from the Hard Shoulder at 4 p.m. Have a great weekend and thanks for listening.